The Story of Our Health Message, Chapter 14, A Lesson in Institutional Finance. To find room for the patients who came to the newly opened Western Health Reform Institute was the first serious problem that confronted its managers. Within 4 months after it was opened, the medical superintendent announced that not only was every room occupied in the three buildings, but that it was necessary to find rooms in neighboring homes. "We do not dare to advertise the institution to any great extent," he said, "for fear we shall not have place for those that may wish to come." He felt that the need for another large building for the accommodation of the patients was imperative, and urged that the erection of such a building be begun early in the spring at a probable cost of $25,000 or more. He concluded his statement and appeal with these words: "Shall this money be raised immediately and this building erected as soon as possible? Or shall we continue to do business on as limited a scale as at present, and in a few months from now not be able to receive at the Health Institute but a very small portion of those that may wish to come? I ask again, what shall be done?" Elder Smith's call for action. This question was answered promptly in a Review and Herald editorial by Elder Uriah Smith. "The Institute, now not yet 5 months old, is literally running over," he said. "A large, new building is essential. Now is the time to be getting the materials. Hence the necessity for immediate action. There is but one thing that can be done, and that is to erect a commodious building at the earliest possible date. This must be done, and to let the enterprise fail, or even to drag, for want of means, is to be recreant to our duty and the light we have received." Elder Smith had consulted a few friends of the enterprise in Battle Creek and found them ready to subscribe further to the amount of 19 shares of $25 each, and expressed confidence that this was but the beginning of a move that would swell to 1,000 shares. The manager of the institution expressed his confidence that the brethren would see the necessity of taking hold of this work, and announced that, "We have already made a large commencement by making contracts for materials for the building, and which are now being rapidly conveyed to the place assigned. We need funds immediately to meet these contracts." A week later, Elder J.N. Andrews enthusiastically reported the encouraging conditions which he had found on a recent visit to the institution, and said, "You have responded nobly to the calls for means with which to lay its foundation. We ask you to aid its immediate enlargement." The financial calls were still being made on the basis of dividend-bearing stock, and in harmony with this plan, Elder Andrews continued, "We do not ask you to give 1 cent, but we invite you to invest your money in an institution where it may be the means of great good to others, while at the same time it shall yield a fair return of income to yourselves. The entire income will belong to the stockholders, and to no one else. If, therefore, any of you fear a speculation, you will see that the proceeds of it come into your pockets, and not out of them. And if any of you desire to receive nothing as a return, you can have your part of the income devoted to the relief of such patients as can pay nothing. We invite all our people to act in this matter. Some can do largely, all can do something. Shall it be said of us, they have done what they could? New patients nearly every day." In the Health Reformer for March, 1867, Dr. Lay reported that nearly every day witnessed the arrival of new patients, and he spoke of the difficulty in finding rooms for those who were coming. With hopeful optimism, he continued, "We would say, however, that we hope the time is not far distant when we shall have room enough to accommodate 200 or 300 patients. Perhaps this will be no further distant than next autumn. We trust every true friend of the cause will continue to work with ardor and zeal." By the time of the first annual meeting, held on May 17, 1867, the state legislature of Michigan had passed a special act to provide for the formation of corporations for establishing health institutions, under which the Health Reform Institute was recognized as a corporate body. At this meeting, the Articles of Association and the bylaws were read and adopted. A gratifying report was rendered by the auditor, stating that for the 8 months of its operation, the institution had a patient income of $9,584.05. And the statement of income and expense showed a net profit of $1,653.33. It was pointed out that the business thus made possible a dividend to the investors at the rate of 10% per annum. This favorable report increased the enthusiasm in the plans for quickly adding another large building. $15,000 wanted immediately. In August 1867, under the heading, $15,000 wanted immediately, the manager inserted in the review and heralded another strong appeal for means to complete the new building for the Health Reform Institute. He notified the readers of the Review and Herald that the directors had authorized the erection of a brick building. That lumber to the value of $6,000 had already been delivered on the ground. The foundations had been laid, and the lower story of stone had already been completed. He continued, "The question now is, must we stop here for this season, and continue under the disadvantages spoken of for another winter, and incur the extra expense in hiring rooms outside? Or shall we have the necessary means to purchase the brick and immediately complete the erection of the building? As a means for encouraging the brethren to invest liberally in enlarging the institution," writers in the Review and Herald quoted some of the strongest statements from Sister White's appeal for financial support in starting the institution. After this strong appeal, no further mention was made either in the Review and Herald or the Health Reformer regarding the erection of this proposed new building. What were the reasons for this surprisingly abrupt discontinuance of the enterprise? For several months, Elder and Mrs. White had been at their country home in Greenville, Michigan. Elder White, still feeble, had been unable even to attend the annual meeting of the Health Reform Institute. It was with grave apprehension that they heard of the plans to greatly enlarge the infant institution. Regarding her own feelings, Mrs. White wrote, "The disposition manifested to crowd the matter of the Institute so fast has been one of the heaviest trials I have ever borne." As quickly as possible, she wrote to the directors, pointing out that the plan as presented to her had been that the Health Reform Institute should be small at its commencement, and cautiously increased, as good physicians and helpers could be procured and means raised, and as the wants of invalids should demand. She gave voice to her alarm, as she had noted the large calculations hastily urged by those who were leading out in the work. And she gave ample, valid reasons for her misgivings. She pointed out how that without the continued blessing of God the work might be hindered in various ways. The meager staff of physicians might fail through sickness or death. Before the new addition could be completed, the means might cease to come in, thus causing loss not only in capital, but bringing about a general discouragement that might halt the entire enterprise. Or there might come about a decline in the patronage, thus making it impossible even to meet running expenses. Success assured. Assurance was given that, with all the efforts in every department, put forth in a correct and judicious manner, and with the blessing of God, the institution will prove a glorious success. On the other hand, a single failure might sooner or later prove a great injury. It should not be forgotten, Mrs. White reminded the directors, that out of many hygienic institutions started in the United States within the last 25 years, but few maintain even a visible existence at the present time. During later years, Mrs. White was frequently led to repeat what now for the first time she pointed out, that in their enthusiasm over the health reform movement, some of our brethren were in danger of giving it a position of undue importance. While it was important, it was not the leading feature. She counseled, "Let the Health Reform and the Health Institute grow up among us as other worthy enterprises have grown, taking into the account our feeble strength in the past and our greater ability to do much in a short period of time now. Let the Health Institute grow, as other interests among us have grown, as fast as it can safely, and not cripple other branches of the great work which are of equal or greater importance at this time. Move no faster, brethren, than the unmistakable providence of God opens the way before you." She further urged that every stirring appeal in behalf of the Health Reform Institute should be accompanied by a caution not to rob other branches of the work, influenced by the Dansville Institution. Because of their connection for some time with Dr. Jackson's institution at Dansville, New York, it was but natural that the physicians of the Health Reform Institute should have been influenced very largely by the principles and methods of that institution. Timely cautions were now given against unduly patterning the Health Reform Institute at Battle Creek, Michigan, after the one in Dansville, New York, especially in matters of religion and amusement, Mrs. White said. Should those connected with this enterprise cease to look at their work from a high religious standpoint, and descend from the exalted principles of present truth to imitate in theory and practice those at the head of institutions where the sick are treated only for the recovery of health, the special blessing of God would not rest upon our institution more than upon those where corrupt theories are taught and practiced. It should ever be kept prominent that the great object to be attained through this channel is not only health, but perfection and the spirit of holiness, which cannot be attained with diseased bodies and minds. This object cannot be secured by working merely from the worldling's standpoint. To some extent, policies of the Dansville Institution were being introduced, such as the recommendation of amusements that excite and weary the brain, and an undue emphasis upon complete physical and mental rest. It is of interest to note that in this early instruction, outdoor manual work for the patients was presented as a beneficial exercise. Regarding this, Mrs. White wrote, "I saw there should be connected with the institute ample grounds, beautiful with flowers, and planted with vegetables and fruits. Here the feeble could find work, appropriate to their sex and condition, at suitable hours. These grounds should be under the care of an experienced gardener, to direct all in a tasteful, orderly manner." At the time that Mrs. White wrote these words, the term occupational therapy, as well as its value, was unknown. It is a cause for regret that Seventh-day Adventists did not recognize more fully the potential value of the foregoing instruction given to them so many years ago. Others have been privileged to lead out in the adoption of the work cure, with demonstrations of remarkable success. Warned against a worldly policy. In Mrs. White's testimony regarding the work of the Health Reform Institute, she warned of the danger that through following a worldly policy, or personal interest, or a desire to be engaged in a great and popular work, the blessing of God upon this branch of the cause would be withheld. She pointed out that skill, scientific knowledge, and facilities were not sufficient. In all these things, the young institution at Battle Creek was surpassed by others. Yet she gave assurance that, with God's blessing, angels will attend patients, helpers, and physicians to assist in the work of restoration, so that in the end the glory will be given to God, and not to feeble, short-sighted man. In justice to those to whom these messages were sent, we should not forget that in the active leadership of our work, aside from Elder James White, there was no one who had special knowledge and experience in finance. Although making a gratifying recovery from his invalidism, he was still physically unable to carry heavy responsibilities, and these were for a time placed on younger and less experienced shoulders. The gratifying initial patronage of the institution led to unwarranted confidence in the ability of a small denomination with limited means to undertake a work comparable to the long-established larger health institution at Dansville, with which the Health Reform Institute physicians had been connected. Elder White feared that the testimony against overexpansion would make it difficult to secure further pledges to the institute. He expressed his conviction that the plans for erecting a large brick building at that time had been a mistake, and that its immediate completion would bring worse results than to abandon the enterprise. This opinion seems to have prevailed, for the work of that building was deferred and even the foundations that had been laid were leveled to the ground. Another testimony from Mrs. White. It appeared a notice to the effect that it would be ready in a few days. The brethren were urged to order it immediately in order to receive it and read it, and have time to respond to important matters pertaining to the cause before General Conference, appointed for May 12th to 17th, 1868. An examination of the contents of the testimony referred to reveals the reason for this urgent appeal to read it. In the leading article, entitled "The Health Institute," Mrs. White spoke of her great interest in the health reform, and of her high hopes of the prosperity of the institution. A terrible burden had rested upon her because she had seen the institution running into certain dangers which had been presented before her. In this message for the church, Mrs. White referred to a good work that had been wrought for the church at Battle Creek during the autumn of 1868, and gratifyingly records a thorough reform and turning to the Lord by physicians, helpers, and managers at the Health Institute, and the general agreement of our brethren and sisters in all parts of the field, relative to the great object of the Health Institute. She expressed the fond hope that the Health Reform Institute might prosper and become in every respect what had been shown her. She laid down the principle anew that the health reform is a part of the great work connected with the third angel's message, a branch of the great, charitable, liberal, sacrificing, benevolent work of God. Then she raised the question, why should these brethren say, stock in the Health Institute will pay a large percent, it is a good investment, a paying thing? She disclaimed any intention of appealing for the raising of funds for the establishment of the health institution in a manner different from that for other phases of the cause of truth. All was to be motivated by the spirit of liberality. Although the change from the present plan to one that can be fully approved of the Lord may be attended with difficulties, and require time and labor, yet I think that it can be made with little loss of stock already taken, and that it will result in a decided increase of capital donated to be used in a proper manner to relieve suffering humanity involved in debt. Mrs. White's apprehensions regarding the new enterprise were well grounded, as shown in the financial statement rendered at the second annual meeting of the Health Reform Institute, held on May 15, 1868. This was not so pleasing as that of the previous year. According to the auditor's report, the institution had done a patient business of only a little over $1,000 a month. The difference between receipts and expenditures for the year showed a balance of operating gain of a little over $1,000, but this consisted entirely of accounts receivable. The institution was owing over $13,000 as against $1,500 due to it. In harmony with Mrs. White's counsel, an important action was taken at this time. The financial policy of the institution was changed in order to make it a missionary enterprise. It was voted to dispose of future dividends, for all coming time as far as practicable, to the directors of the institute, for its charitable uses and purposes. IBID. The stockholders were requested to forego the expectation of dividends on their investments. Provision was made whereby any who were unable to make their investments as a donation might be reimbursed as their stocks were replaced by others. Not only did the constituency of the Health Reform Institute adopt the recommended change in the Constitution, but, as reported by Elder White, the entire conference, and as far as we could learn of, its friends everywhere, were in favor of conducting it on the same liberal, benevolent plan as that of the Publishing Association. By this time Elder White's health had so far recovered that he was again taking an active part in the management of the work. At the constituency meeting he was elected to, and accepted a place on, the board of directors. He was soon able to report that many of the stockholders had already so arranged the matter of their stock as to cut off all income from it forever. He pointedly reminded some of the brethren who had given as a reason why they had taken little or no stock in the institution that they objected to the plan which made investment in the institution a matter of profit instead of liberality, that this objection was removed. Now they were urged to take new stock or to purchase the stock of some who had invested more heavily than they were able to, as a matter of charity. The crisis passed. As a matter of reassurance, Elder White wrote, "The large building is given up for the present, and the material is being sold. Still a debt of several thousands will be resting upon the Institute after this is done. Efforts will be made in the future to have everything connected with the Institute managed on the most economical plan, and everything that can be done by the directors to overcome present embarrassments will be done." He maintained that it was no time for the professed friends of the Institute to settle back and cast an influence against it. "The very worst time for a horse to balk," he said, "is when the load draws hard. Now is the time for all to stand together like Christian men and women, and share equally the privilege of sacrificing in the cause of Christ. Mrs. W. and self have $1,000 in the Institute, as a matter of liberality, and shall expect wealthy brethren to stand with us in this matter." Thus was passed the first crisis in the history of the Health Reform Institute, an emergency which threatened not only to defeat the purposes of God and the maintenance of the principles for which the institution was established, but also to involve it in financial bankruptcy. Out of the sad experience there shines one blessing, however, in the instruction that came emphasizing God's purposes and plans for sanitarium work in connection with the great worldwide message of truth committed to the remnant church. This instruction may well be studied with profit at this time.